We all know about the ClimateGate emails from the University of East Anglia and how they revealed efforts by some leading climate scientists to hide information from outsiders. Well, one of those outsiders is a British citizen named David Holland. His case has been looked at in some detail by our next guest, Australian scientist John Abbott. Now, this is interesting because it reveals the UK Met Office has also been involved in successful action to deny vital information to the public. And when I say vital, I mean data that could allow other people to check the doomsday predictions of the establishment scientists, or at least some of the trends and the facts on which they base those predictions. John Abbott has a degree in chemistry from Imperial College London, a PhD in science from McGill University in Canada, and a law degree from the University of Queensland. It's an interesting mix. And recently, he co-published a peer-reviewed article in the journal Environmental Law and Management about the case of David Holland. He joins us now. John, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Michael.
Let's just start with a quick look at the sort of status of ClimateGate. There have been a number of reports or investigations into that in England, I understand. Just very generally, what have they found?
Well, there have been three reports issued so far. One is the parliamentary report and two initiated by the university itself. They say, first of all, that they are not examining climate science itself. They're essentially examining the behaviour of people at the University of East Anglia. What they seem to conclude in the main is that the main problem is not the scientists themselves, it's how freedom of information legislation is dealt with. That is, whether the scientists are complying with their responsibilities to disclose information when it's requested by the public.
What about the University of East Anglia itself? Has it reviewed the way it handles requests for data?
Yes, it has, and it has admitted essentially that there have been deficiencies. One might ponder on whether some of the intensity surrounding ClimateGate is being deflected from the scientists onto rather more anonymous people in the administration who deal with freedom of information. That's a personal view.
ClimateGate, of course, was about the university at East Anglia, and we'll be talking in a moment about the UK Met Office. Why are these institutions particularly important?
They're both quite pivotal organisations in terms of the evaluation of climate change generally, particularly as it pertains to the IPCC. That's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And so in addition to being repositories of climatic information, these two organisations are also important in that there are people employed within those organisations, such as Professor Phil Jones at East Anglia, who's been the subject of intense scrutiny with ClimateGate.
He's been in the news.
Well, certainly since ClimateGate. Yeah, these people are quite crucial in the overall appraisal of climatic information within the IPCC. The IPCC itself is a very small organisation. It, I think, has a couple of dozen people. And essentially, it draws upon climatic scientists from all over the world and two places that have quite a number of scientists who contribute quite significantly to these reports are at the Met Office and at the University of East Anglia.
Mm. Okay, well, let's talk about this case study. And it starts with someone who is far less well-known to most of our listeners, including to me until I read your paper, David Holland. Who's he?
David Holland's a British resident. He's an electrical engineer by training. And he has quite a passionate interest in climate science and the way it's been assessed. So he's really been following the issues surrounding global warming, ClimateGate, how the IPCC operates. One of his avenues of exploration has been to approach various public authorities, particularly in the UK, to try and get information about climate out of them.
Okay, but in terms of climate science, he's what one might call an outsider.
One might say that, but by the same token, when one looks at a lot of commentators or so-called experts on climate science, they come from a wide variety of backgrounds.
Looking now at the present example, the subject of your paper, what does David Holland want to find out and from whom?
In this particular case, what David Holland has been attempting to do is approach the UK Met Office and try and get information, particularly from the chief scientist at the Met Office. This is a Dr. John Mitchell. And the information that David Holland wanted, and still wants, particularly relates to a certain chapter of the last IPCC report. And this is a chapter which relates to something called paleoclimate, which has been quite a contentious issue. And in particular, whether there has been something called a medieval warm period. And I'll just explain what a couple of those terms mean. Paleoclimate means an examination of historical records of climate. That is, we want to look into the distant past before thermometers were around, let's say going back thousands of years, and try and deduce what the climate was like, particularly the temperature, through what are called proxies, such as tree rings. I'm sure people are familiar with the fact that you can take a section of a tree and count the rings and get the age of the tree. You can also, by looking at the rings in more detail, tell something about past climate from the width of the rings. So what David Holland was particularly interested in finding out from the Met Office, from Dr. John Mitchell, was how he, as the review editor of the paleoclimate chapter of the IPCC report, had reviewed all of the evidence for and against the existence of a medieval warm period. And when I say medieval warm period, what I'm referring to is a period of time about 1,000 years ago where there's significant evidence that the temperatures, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, were as warm as we have today. And this is actually quite an important issue, because if the temperatures were as warm as they are today, and yet the carbon dioxide levels measured in the atmosphere are much higher today through emissions from burning fossil fuels, this can present a difficulty in trying to convince people that it's the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere which is a major determinant of temperature.
Unless there was a burst of industrial activity back then that we're no longer aware of.
Well, that could be so. So what David Holland basically wants is to try and find out how the IPCC, through the chief scientist at the Met Office, has looked at all of the available information and come up with an assessment. And this is important because if we go back to earlier IPCC reports, let's go back 20 years to about 1990, we can see graphs where there's a very prominent medieval warm period. This is clearly presented in graphs in the early reports. But as we progress in time, the level of temperature during that historical period keeps declining. And so what they actually end up with is quite a famous graph. Listeners may be aware of a graph that's referred to as the hockey stick, which has received a lot of attention. This is a graph showing a pretty flat temperature over a period of the last couple of thousand years, and then it's only during the 20th century that the temperature abruptly rises.
Okay, so David Holland wanted to know why the IPCC, or how it had come to change its mind in a sense, and John Mitchell was someone who would probably know. So what sort of information specifically did David Holland request?
What he was asking for is the documents which were relevant to Dr. Mitchell's assessment of all of the information during the preparation of this particular chapter. So Dr. Mitchell was in charge of looking at all of the papers to do with this particular issue, and essentially in charge of writing the final chapter on paleoclimate for the IPCC.
As I understand it, David Holland applied, was it under FOI legislation?
Correct.
Right. Yep. And what was the UK Met Office's first response?
Well, the first response that David Holland received was that all of the relevant information that he was requesting had been deleted or destroyed.
Huh. Well, that was the end of that then.
Well,
what happened?
I think...
I know it wasn't. What happened next?
What David Holland did was to respond by asking when all of this information had been deleted.
It's probably just as well he did, isn't it?
I think, as we'll see, one has to be persistent if you actually want to get information.
Yeah. Okay, so what was the response to that? So next one.
Well, what the Met Office did was not really to explain that the information had not in fact been deleted, but shifted to another line of defence in that they obviously didn't want to disclose the information. And so what they now told David Holland was that although they did have the information that he requested, it wasn't covered by FOI. And the reason they gave is because that when this information was created, when it was produced by the chief scientist, he was not acting in his official capacity. He was, in fact, operating in a personal capacity, not as an employee of the Met Office.
Now, I understand that, once again, through persistence, David Holland proved that this was wrong and that, in fact, the work had been done on Met Office time. Did the Met Office ever retract that initial claim that the notes had been destroyed? Where does that stand?
No, they just left that. No. They don't explain.
Okay. Did it ever apologise or acknowledge that the claim that Dr. Mitchell had done the IPCC work in his own time is wrong?
Not at all. I've seen all of the correspondence. Mm. It's quite lengthy.
Okay. So what happened next?
David Holland managed to establish that Dr. Mitchell was in fact an employee, that he was being paid his salary, he wasn't on vacation, and his travel expenses were being paid by the Met Office. At that point, when it became clear that the chief scientist was in fact an employee, we move into looking at various exemptions, or the Met Office looked at various exemptions, that is, reasons that they can put up for not providing information.
Can you give us an example of one of those?
Yeah, one of the exemptions that the Met Office used was to say that there would be a problem in terms of international relations. This is a legitimate exemption within the Act. And what they're saying essentially is that they had contacted the IPCC as an international body and asked them if they would get upset if the information that David Holland requested was disclosed. I've seen the response from the IPCC, and they say that they would not be happy about that.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because the IPCC has been known to boast about its openness and transparency.
It is interesting, and there are actually a set of IPCC principles, which are fairly easy to find on the internet. And one of the statements is that it conducts its reviews in a comprehensive, objective, open and transparent manner. And one might focus on the words open and transparent and come to some sort of assessment about it.
Yeah, okay. So Mr. Holland, or David Holland, hasn't got his information yet. We admire his persistence. Where does he stand now? Has he given up at last?
No, Mr. Holland doesn't give up easily. No,
even though they are many and he is one.
Now he is extremely persistent. What can actually happen next, and in general, if you have a request under FOI which is knocked back, you can first of all ask for an internal review, and he's done that, and the Met Office is standing firm. What you can do in the UK is go to the Information Commissioner. And this is an external body set up by the government to review situations where somebody's made an FOI request and they're not happy with the response.
We'll watch that with interest. Any thoughts from yourself on what the case tells us?
I think it tells us that if you want information, you probably have to be persistent. I think it tells us that, and this is coupling information from David Holland's case with the ClimateGate scenario, that there is a reluctance on the part of various influential bodies to disclose climate information. What one would wonder, I think, especially if there are assertions that the science is settled, this is something that we do hear, that why there would be so much secrecy and reluctance to disclose climatic information.
John Abbott, an Australian scientist, discussing his peer-reviewed paper titled Accessing Environmental Information Relating to Climate Change, a Case Study Under UK Freedom of Information Legislation. And that paper was published in the British journal Environmental Law and Management. A transcript of that interview can be found on our website, abc.net.au/rn/counterpoint.
Michael, John Abbott's account could be titled, Yes, Minister Meets the Dog Ate Me Homework.
Well, at least you can't legislate against persistence.